Yeah.
What time is it? It's Fiend time. I'm Nima Vidati here in Central Texas. We've got Michael W. Dean up in Airworm One. How are you doing today, Mr. Dean? You guys don't have sound conditioning on the inside of the jet?
Jet? Man. No, it's a blimp, man. Airworm One is a blimp. It goes as fast as a worm. So if y'all are tired of us talking about Bitcoin, Namecoin, meow, and Meowbit, and if you think, this doesn't affect me, cryptocurrencies sound like magical libertarian money made out of thin air from fairy dust and nerd speak. Well, that's true.
Kinda. Yeah.
And it's also true to some extent of Federal Reserve notes, but cryptocurrencies are voluntary. No one's forced to use them, unlike with government money. And if you believe that if you're believing the mainstream media hit pieces coming out every week saying Bitcoin is a bad thing, it's a Ponzi scheme, it's going to destroy the world, you have to realize that those outlets are owned by the status quo banks and the government, structures that are threatened by the freedom of Bitcoin. And if you think this doesn't affect you, that's like people in 1995 who said, Internet, I don't need that. Mm-hmm. That's for nerds. So, you know, we're gun guys. We carry guns. We never leave home without guns. But this is more important. Why, Nima? And tell us about your week.
This is more important than guns because this is actually a way that people who are smarter than the state can outsmart the state, run end runs around it, and we can have a voluntary opt-in organization that structures society. Without even firing a shot, we can just make the state lonely. We can turn the state into MySpace, basically, to where everybody's
it'll still be
out
there. And it'll still technically have 50 million users, but they just haven't logged in about 6 years. That's going to be the state.
Yes.
And it's not necessarily just being smarter than the state, because technically the state has some really smart people. And I'm not talking about the people that have to search your whatever at the TSA. I'm talking about the people. You know, there are rocket scientists. Most rocket scientists work for the state. And, you know, they always
Here's the thing, though. A lot of the smart people working for the state are doing it just because the paycheck is a lot bigger than elsewhere.
And when it
stops
coming.
And the benefits are decent.
Yeah.
And they get the paycheck and then they go home and listen to the Freedom Fiends.
Yeah.
We know a few people like that.
Or, you know, they're really smart people like Edward Snowden who work for the state and then go, like, post it all online. So here's the thing. It's not necessarily just intelligence. It is intelligence, but it's decentralization, because decentralization is the key to liberty, and the government can't work in a decentralized way. I mean, they try. They have fusion centers in every town, and we just sit on government-controlled radio laughing at them, and they always get it wrong. I would like to make a bumper sticker that says, next time there's a terrorist attack, keep in mind the government was busy listening to my phone calls instead. You know, literally, they never get it right. They're always spying on the wrong people. They spy on everybody, but they actually, that's electronically, they actually, you know, record everything. They actually have people listening to certain people like Neem and I. I mean, I don't think that we yet are somebody's full-time job, but us and Ben Stone and Free Talk Live and maybe one or two other shows are somebody's full-time job to sit in a cubicle and listen to. And eventually he'll probably quit his job and, you know, come work for us.
No, he'll just become a wrecker. He'll keep his job and just report, those guys are great. They're not saying anything bad. We aren't, but
he'll come work for us and we'll pay him in magical fairy money made from pixie dust and liberty and nerd speak.
Yeah. Well, the thing about it is it's not just – it's magic in the sense that it does something people didn't think could happen with currency and money, and it solves the double spending problem, and it's completely transparent. It is superior mathematically to what people call Federal Reserve notes, which nobody knows how much money in Federal Reserve notes is out there.
Yeah, you can't you cannot counterfeit a Bitcoin or a Namecoin, because you can look in the blockchain to see if that unique one exists.
Right. And here's the thing. I think the Constitution tried in its infant way, its baby step way, to make decentralization kind of a cool thing, or pretended to try at least. You know, that's what checks and balances was about.
Yeah, and that's what the 13 colonies each being their own liberty, their own laboratory of liberty idea was. And of course, with time, it became centralized to where, you know, they're trying to get rid of state laws and just have federal laws for everything and make them worse and outlaw the things that were specifically inlawed or allowed for citizens in the Constitution, like guns and free speech.
And speaking of guns, a lot of people, you know, in the liberty movement 2 or 3 years ago, there was this sort of debate of what, you know, what happens next? How do we get from here to there, to this free society? And some people were really into the Second Amendment solutions, I think was the term. And it was using the guns. And we were like, no, man, that can't happen. We never subscribed to that. And still to this day. You can point to violence in Ukraine or some people point at Afghanistan and say, hey, look, all these people in caves are keeping the United States Army at bay. But do you want to live in a place that looks like Afghanistan? No.
That's an AK-47 being cocked, by the way.
Oh, nice.
Just to show we're not, oh, you don't need guns. Just have cryptocurrencies. No, man, they're all good.
Right, but here's the thing with guns is, do you want to live in a society that's war-torn? I don't think anybody does.
No!
And could you? I mean, I guess you could keep them at bay, but could you defeat the U.S. Army?
No.
They have way more technological advancement as far as weapons go in the physical world.
They can also really blockade you and starve you easily. You know how easy it would be now? Compared to like when they were starving people in the Soviet Union and in Cambodia, I mean, they had to actually like put up trucks then and block people and shoot people. Now it's like they could literally empty the Walmart in 3 days with a phone call. You know, they could just give an executive order, like no trucks get through, you can't go there, et cetera, you know?
Yeah, but the technological advantage they have like that in the physical world with all the guns they have pointed at everyone, the opposite is true in the cryptocurrency realm, in the world of decentralized, trust-free is another buzzword I really like because you're not trusting people. I think Andreas Antonopoulos says you're trusting math, which tells the truth every time. It's like Jay-Z says, men lie, women lie, numbers don't. So if you want to talk about trusting something, why not trust the thing that is impossible to lie to you? And the state can't attack it. It can't win. Its technological advantage in the physical world with guns is as great of a divide as the computer geeks, I guess you would call them, their technological advantage, and people in general, society as a whole's technical advantage when it comes to cryptocurrency. And I want to play this SOT from the Texas Bitcoin Conference during Andreas's question and answer section. The question audio's you know, somebody's coughing, so it's I guess bear with it, but the gist of it is, what happens if some nation state decides to take on Bitcoin and crush this thing that they fear so much? And Andreas says what he thinks will happen, so I'm gonna go ahead and play this and give you guys a better sense of how this plays out and why it's all Bitcoin all the time.
First, you have to explain that you went to the Texas Bitcoin Conference.
Oh, people know that already. We're running short on time. I'll explain after. I'm going to go ahead and play it.
Do you have any concerns about a large nation state that has interest in just actively destroying Bitcoin to make their own, you know, super rigs and design chips and just throw hundreds of millions or billions of dollars to intentionally disrupt the blockchain?
Yeah, I don't worry about that at all. This cannot be done with Bitcoin anymore. This is something that can only be done with nascent altcoins. Bitcoin has achieved a level of computing that no single nation state can overthrow it through computation alone. The effort to do so would require a massive covert operation of chip fabrication, then the coordinated assault that would give them dominance over the next block for 10 minutes until we kick those bastards off the network, rework the protocol around them. They would be revealed. They would have lost $1 billion doing this, and all they got to do was one double spend. Now, here's the thing. Long before we get to that point, they figure out that if they just let this stuff run, they can actually get some Bitcoin as a reward, because the incentive structure actually works. And so I'm not worried about that. This is the kind of heavy-handed action that can drive conspiracy theory, but is really only applicable on a small scale for a small altcoin. Governments aren't good at doing massive conspiracy. They're good at doing small conspiracy, but massive conspiracy like that doesn't go unnoticed. And a lot of people are watching the blockchain. And as I said before, what are they going to do? So they take over and they fork the blockchain and they go somewhere, right? They've created an alternative blockchain. Great. What are we going to do? Who's going to join the NSA blockchain? Anybody want to jump Trump and Fedcoin. So we're all going to stay on the old fork. Difficulty will go down. It will get more profitable for the miners who stayed behind, and we'll carry on with our coin, and they can go mine whatever the hell they want on their alternative blockchain. They achieve nothing. They can't make protocol changes because, we, as I said, five constituencies in consensus, and it would take $1 billion to pull the most ridiculous Keystone Cops failure in history. Plus, this would actually require government that can do IT. You think they could organize a massive mining rig? Go check out healthcare.gov.
Nice.
So yeah, that's the thing, man. The state, we found a way. We found the checkmate. It's there. So that's why I'm so excited. And that's really the sense that I got at the Texas Bitcoin Conference, which was an amazing 2 days, last Wednesday and Thursday, March 5th and 6th. And everybody there talking about, A, what to do with Bitcoin to quiet the naysayers who think that the CEO of Bitcoin died and committed suicide and that Bitcoin is crashing because of Mt. Gox. Yeah, exactly. But what can we do to make the average person realize that all this stuff in the mainstream media is complete nonsense, nothing more than complete lies?
Mt. Gox collapsing, if you don't know, it was a big Bitcoin exchange. It going out of business does less to Bitcoin than a bank failing does to money,
dollars. Or if you want to do another analogy, it's like the fact that AOL doesn't really exist anymore as a popular thing on the web.
Yeah, it's still there. And you know, I would be more I'm more interested in the fact that several high level bankers have committed suicide lately than somebody at a Bitcoin exchange died.
Exactly. And so there's that. There's figuring out issues to make it better, because that's the thing, is everybody's always working to make it better. And there's competition. The person who actually does make it better is going to get a lot of cryptocurrency in their wallets.
And
they're really incentivized.
And
politicians don't have that incentive.
There's also Namecoin and our improvement, Meowbit, from meowbit.com. Go check that out. And if you make a donation, you'll get your name in the golden blockchain of redemption. We'll be back with more with Nima Vedati, Blockstrian economist after this. Blockstrian economist.
There you go.
That's your term. Yeah.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. Inoculation from indoctrination. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. You know, without the Star Trek communicator, we wouldn't have cell phones or computers that fit in your pocket. Because envisioning the future is the first step to real groundbreaking changes in our lifetime. That's why I love Scott Beezer's webcomic, Quantum Vibe. Quantum Vibe has allowed me to more clearly envision LibPair or Libertarian Paradise and help me work toward it. Who'll build the roads? You and me. Who'll draw up the blueprints? Scott Beezer in Quantum Vibe at BigHeadPress.com. That's BigHeadPress.com. Yeah.
Yeah, we were talking about Jeff Tucker and how he vapes. When I saw him at the Texas Bitcoin Conference, he had an e-cig.
No, we were debating something else about him, but we're not going to go into it.
Right, but the guy is a complete gentleman and an amazing guy, a wonderful speaker, and he had an e-cigarette in his lapel, and I was like, awesome, because I've seen him write stuff about smoking cigarettes before and the cigarette Nazis, and it's good to see that Jeff is one of these guys that knows everything from the old school. Like, he's a great economist in his own right, and I think he knows a lot more about Mises and has done more study than a lot of people out there in the world who say they have, but he doesn't let it stick him and pigeonhole him in some old school thing where he can't advance. He vapes, and he's a complete Bitcoin evangelist. And he says there's so many new things that Bitcoin is teaching us. He laughed in some guy's face a few weeks ago. I heard the audio on a John Bush thing on Let's Talk Bitcoin. A guy named Daniel, I can't remember his last name, but Daniel was like, I'm just trying to say that from an Austrian perspective, and Jeff Tucker just laughs at him, goes, ha, hey, look, buddy, if Satoshi knew anything about Austrian economics, case, he would not have started Bitcoin because it's so implausible. But this means that it doesn't mean that Bitcoin doesn't work in some kind of sense, because obviously if you look at the real world, Bitcoin completely works. So it means you have to go back and change your view of economics.
Austrian economics, you know, the Mises type of economics, and the who are the other Austrians, the big Austrians?
Rothbard, Hayek. Although Jeff Tucker says Hayek actually could have envisioned something similar to Bitcoin coming out.
Yeah. The thing is, like, Austrian economics has always been the libertarian economics, the counter to the state economics. But this is something I'm noticing, too, is kind of like strict Austrian economics is kind of blown out of the water by Bitcoin. You need to be a Blockstrian economist now, not Blockstrian, an Austrian economist. Because
Which builds on top of it. It's not to say that the stuff was wrong back then. It's just limited. To say that they couldn't have foreseen what the digital world
it's kind of like if all of a sudden aliens landed and lived in harmony among us. You know, medical doctors would have to learn new things. Like a medical doctor degree wouldn't really cover everything medical doctors would do. They'd still have the basis of it, but they'd have to learn new things. And that's how it is with Blockstrian economists versus Austrian economists.
Right. And so some old school Austrian economist saying Bitcoin doesn't work is like, in your metaphor, some doctor watching some guy's arm be reattached by the alien saying, no, that's impossible. I don't believe it.
Or you're
looking at it, though.
Or, you know, operating on some being that has three hearts instead of one, and, three hearts beat as one would be the new love song, but for self love. Jeffrey Tucker kind of reminds me of Truman Capote.
I never saw that movie. So and even before the movie, I think Truman Capote was a real person, right?
Yes. Come on, man. You kids.
It was a joke. Come on, kids. You got to get it.
All right, I get it. Yeah,
but I was trying to make the joke that Philip Seymour Hoffman is such a good actor that you think of the person as him instead of the original character.
He's dead, though. And Jeffrey Tucker is very much alive. And, we have jeffreytucker.bit, and we've offered it to him. And he's here's my thing with all – I have, like, cyber squatted the domain name of every liberty person in .bit. And I'm offering them free. I'm like, hey, let me give you this. I'll give you some Namecoin to get going with it. I'll teach you how to use it. I'll teach you how to configure your site. Okay, that is going to be the offer for 6 months. After 6 months, it's going to be one Bitcoin. And it's going to go up one Bitcoin every 6 months. And after 6 months, I'm not going to have a placeholder page. Their sites are just going to go to Freedom Fiends. But they could get them free now. I'm saying that. For the next six months, they can get them free. And, like, get free lessons from me. So, there you go.
Yeah. There you go. Free lessons, like, you mean if Jeff Tucker wanted jeffreytucker.bit and he called you, you'd walk him through so he wouldn't just have to look at the tutorial?
Yeah. Wow. And the thing is, it's not like I'm saying, join my cult. It's like I'm saying, I have the thing that's going to get people to your website after the government starts shutting down websites. And when they start those people are going to come to me really quick when the government starts shutting down websites. It's like people don't understand how important this is. And I'm still out there trying to say, meowbit.com, meowbit.com. And people just don't get it, man. They don't get it.
Well, when you explain it to just about anybody, they think it's really cool.
Yeah.
I was actually packing up my camera gear after somebody's speech, and this Texan couple, like, they weren't like Bitcoin internationals from Germany, which there were at the Texas Bitcoin Conference. No, they were like from Round Rock with a cowboy hat and boots going to figure out where to spend their oil dividends on. And they saw the Meowbit, and the guy pacing goes, Meowbit? What's that? And so I explained .bit websites, and as soon as I said, you know, basically it's government proof domain so that they can't shut down a website, and you use these name coins to get your domain. You don't have to go through some central scrutinizer like I can to keep your stuff from getting taken down. And they perked up, and the wife was like really intrigued by it. And they grabbed a flyer, and hopefully they'll buy some name coin and get their own .bit.org or .bit website to sell their chicken eggs.
Yeah. Worms. Freedom Fiends.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. So much truth, it hurts.
Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges start a conversation with your neighbor or your doctor or your family or your school. Now there's teachers and lawyers and business executives, and they all wear shiny badges and they all reject the state. Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges show the world that you reject coercion and aggression and oppression by the state. Shinybadges.com.
Freedom Fiends. Yes, this is Nima Vidati from the Freedom Fiends live talk radio show. We've got Michael W. Dean, the avid endorsement, in his bunker with his hands on the buttons, ready to centrally scrutinize all the liberties.
With my AK-47 and my Bitcoins and my name coins against tyranny. Actually, the coins are better against tyranny. So,
When I was on Free Talk Live, Mark Edge was like, we were sort of pre-gaming during the commercial break, and I'm like, oh, we got to plug Meowbit. And he's like, yes, we're definitely going to plug Meowbit, or else we'll all get emails from Michael.
Oh, he said that on the air. He called me the libertarian NSA. And then and then later, okay, this is kind of funny. I talked about this on Ben Stone, but I sent the next day, I sent Mark and Ian a note that said that I sent them $30 in Bitcoin. I liked what I said. The libertarian NSA liked what they said about me on the air. They got it right. So I want to buy him lunch at the conference. The truth of that, I accidentally sent that 30 Bitcoin to Mark because he was the or $30 in Bitcoin because he was the last person I'd sent money to because I bought ad time on Free Talk Live for meowbit.com. And it was on my clipboard from the night before. I'd left my computer on, and the thing I was trying to send to myself, and it didn't copy to one from wallet to another. And I sent it to Mark, and I was like, oh, man. And I did not want to say to this guy who's, like, been really nice to me and done lots of favors, him and Ian, you know, they helped get us on radio and gave, you know, they talk about us all the time. So I didn't want to say, hey, give me back that $30 I just sent you. So I honestly immediately decided it would be to buy them lunch, and I wrote them and said, yeah, this is to buy you lunch. But it wasn't planned that way, but I'll come clean.
Good
so,
job.
You know, on like local music radio, they'll do shout outs like, yeah, and I just want to say hi to my homies, Jeremiah and Sheila, working down at the car wash today. I want to do a shout out to my programmer, Derek Slopey, who's hard at work. He's hard at work, like with a chisel, pounding out zeros and ones, improving Meowbit and listening to us probably right as we're speaking. And I say my programmer, he's not my property, but that comes from being in a band. Like I would say my guitar player, Jay.
My drummer.
Jay would say, you know, my singer, Michael. And it's kind of like you're a gang. You know, when you're in a band, like a good band is like a gang. And I really look at like a programming company like that these days. And I don't mean a gang like violent. I mean like, you know, your brothers and you're like, yeah, he's my homie. And I'm his. Yeah.
Well, if you want to use gang but have it not have a violent connotation, you use family, right?
Yeah.
Or my clique.
Like the Manson family. No, I'm kidding.
Like the Manson family. Okay. Yeah, way to explode that thing.
Yeah. So you met some Fiends fans down in Texas. We got a picture of them.
I met a lot of Fiends fans.
We're going to use a picture of you with some Fiends fans for the show notes today. So when you see this out-of-context picture of Nima with his wild, bushy, beautiful hair and two dudes on either side of him grinning like, we just met Nima. This is cool. Did they have Texas accents?
They did. Yeah, they didn't have Valley accents, though. I wish they did. They came up from the Rio Grande Valley. They drove had a little road trip.
Huh? Wasn't one Persian and named Nima?
No, that's a different set of people. The Persian guy I met named Nima also was from San Francisco. He works for he works on Bitcoin stuff in
San
Francisco.
Wasn't he German Persian?
Yeah, he was part German too.
What a multicultural world. And you know, anybody who's like, man, we speak American. We're American. It's like everybody in America is an immigrant, man. Come on. Yeah.
Well, you know? Not everybody. Well, I guess even except the Native Americans were immigrants at some point. They had to cross the Bering Strait, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't spontaneously form from New World apes or something like that.
Yeah, but everybody, you know, everybody that says, America, speak English, keep out, put up a big fence. All of y'all are less than five generations and probably more like two or three, you know, three or four on American soil. Come on, think about it, man. Although me, I'm different. I'm my great 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 grandfather fought in the American Revolution on the American side. And I have proof of that somewhere. My dad has it. I've seen it.
Yeah, somebody told you had proof of it. So that's
yeah,
good
so
enough.
That's on one side. And then on my mother's side, there's French Canadians. So, like, you know, there's separatism in my blood. I was voted in high school most likely to secede.
That's good. Did you coin that just now?
No, but it's pretty funny, man. I
like it.
Yeah.
Okay. Good show. Yeah. The Bitcoin conference was a lot of fun, and that was one of the fun things about it was the nice little ego boosts you get when somebody's like, "Oh, you're that Nima Vedati from the Freedom Fiends."
Yeah.
I was actually standing in line, which you said, "Psh." I was standing in line to talk to Stefan Molyneux, and you're like, "Oh, you're gonna stand in line to talk to somebody?" But actually, I had a camera in my hand. I was gonna try to get some proprietary video because the videography at the Texas Bitcoin conference was so pro, like mind-blowingly pro. So I thought, well,
not,
you know, I'm
not the stuff that I saw on YouTube. There's some stuff on YouTube that's okay, but it's like camcorder footage.
Yeah, not that. No, they if you can go to I forget the website, but you can get there from the Texas Bitcoin Conference website. And if you went there, they sent out an email with the thing to where you get it for free. I think if you didn't go there, you have to pay some money for the videos. You pay like $50, you get full access to them all. But they put in a lot of work. They had these giant tripods that were way taller than any person so that they could sit in the back and shoot at an angle to where they wouldn't get anybody's head in the shot. And they had remote control panning so that they could keep focus on the speakers that moved around a lot.
Kind of like the robots. The TV robots in the new Hunger Game. Have you seen the new Hunger Game?
Kind of like that. Yeah. I've seen both the Hunger Games. I mean, obviously, it was still controlled by a person. It wasn't like automatic panning or face
tracking
or anything
like that. Those were creepy
in
the Hunger Game, man. It was like these big things that like stalk you and make you be on camera.
Yeah,
on the news.
Yeah. No, nothing like that. But so I wanted to get some interviews with people that, you know, because the videography there, it was all stationary. It was men posted in the back with their audio and their video gear staying in one place. So I wanted to make sure I got some other footage so that it would be worthwhile for me to shoot. And so, but I was standing in line. I didn't actually get to interview Stefan Molyneux. He said he had to run to some charity luncheon.
That he was being paid at. He said he was being paid to be at charity luncheon.
Yes, funny. But I did get to chat with him a little bit. But before I got to chat with them, there were like five guys left in the line, and me, and then two girls that were talking to Molyneux, to Stefan, and one of the guys looks at me and goes, "Oh, you're that Nima Vedati," and then they're all like, "Oh, that's the Nima Vedati from the Freedom Fiends," and they started talking about the Fiends and how they listen on LRN, and oh man, it was great to be standing in line to see somebody you view as a celebrity, and then somebody comes and talks to you and they're like, "Oh, I recognize you," and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it is pretty cool, man. I like it.
Yeah, but. Yeah, man. The thing about the conference, too, is everybody seemed to get it that this is the way, this is the workaround for the state. This is the opt-in thing to achieve liberty in our lifetimes. And people say, oh, that'll never happen. We'll never have liberty in our lifetimes. But I think Bitcoin and cryptocurrency kind of is a game changer.
I really like your analogy of where it's headed. Like a lot of people who are into freedom, the only thing they can see is a constitutional solution. So they see rifles and they see like, you know, a new government and constitution. And I see it more like you said it, like, the government will still be around, but it'll be kind of like MySpace.
It'll be a little bit like MySpace.
Yeah. Who's on MySpace? It still has 10, 50 million users, but they haven't checked in 6 years.
Nobody goes there. Yeah. Yeah. And Andreas said, I mean, we'll have dual currency. Most people will interact in a lot of things with Bitcoin. You'll still have dollars so you can pay your taxes and get a new driver's license. It'll be the gov currency, the Fed coin that you need to get in order to do some specific things that old people make you do. I mean, that's where I really see it going. And here's the thing. It was this conference with a bunch of people who talk about, you know, who've talked about politics on their shows a lot in the past and things like that. Not one person mentioned any politician the whole time. These are people
except
talking about the future organization of society. Not one person talked about a politician except when I was talking to Paul Snow, and actually a lobbyist who goes to the state house all the time. That's his job, to go to the state house and argue for things. And he was there on a fact-finding mission. And I was talking to this lobbyist and Paul Snow, the director of the conference, and somehow Larry Gonzalez, my state rep, came up. I think that's his name. His last name is Gonzalez. I'm not sure if Larry's the beginning
that's
or
how,
not.
That's how involved in politics you are.
Yeah, that's how little I care. And he says, oh, yeah, he was supposed to be here, Paul Snow says. Larry Gonzalez was supposed to be here, but at the last minute he canceled because he said that a girl from antiwar.com was going to be here. And I think he was talking about Angela Keaton, Comrade Keaton, she tweets
I like
as.
Her.
But she had maybe one thing. I didn't even see her thing on the schedule. Her presence at the thing was so, so tiny.
She retweets us. Maybe her presence was just great. Tweeting it.
And I love her, and I love antiwar.com. It's the best place to get factual foreign policy news.
Yeah, and think about the fact that, like, a politician couldn't be remotely associated with someone from something called antiwar.com, which basically tells you
That's how pro-war they are.
Like that's the state. The state is war. The state is destruction. They can't afford to be associated with someone who might say, hey, maybe we shouldn't be bombing wedding parties, you know?
Yes. And now I don't know if that's actually the reason the state rep gave, but I do know that that's what I heard from the organizer of the conference, and maybe secondhand, so I have no proof. But the next day I went to the panel that he was supposed to be on, and I have video evidence that he was on the list. He was on the schedule to be on that panel. He was not on that panel. I took a video of the panel and waited there for him to announce everybody that was on the panel. The state rep was not on the panel.
I'll say this. Anybody who's anti-abortion is a hypocrite if they're pro-war, because what the United States government does is they blow up wedding parties to kill one guy. And you know, at wedding parties in the Middle East or anywhere, there's going to be pregnant women, there's going to be babies, there's going to be children. If you care about human life, you can't be pro-war, at least not in the offensive war way that the U.S. is.
And it's one guy that never had a chance to address the charges against him. Yeah. In fact, there were no charges ever created. It can be a thing called a signature strike, where they're targeting this guy because he does jumping jacks and owns a gun. Now, how many of you good red-blooded American Second Amendment proponents out there have done jumping jacks and also own a rifle?
Yeah. And a lot of people who own rifles should probably do a few more jumping jacks, in my experience.
I don't know if you had to go there, but probably.
Come on, man.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of gun stuff, a guy from Central Texas Gunworks. Yeah, he gave me his card here. Michael Cargill. In his gun shop in Austin, he's got a Bitcoin ATM, and he's selling guns for Bitcoin and also doing concealed carry licensing classes in Bitcoin. So I was here's how there's co-opetition now between the state and cryptocurrency is I think I'm actually going to go take my CHL class and get fully approved to conceal carry because I can do it with Bitcoin.
Yes.
Now, when I had to pay Federal Reserve notes for it, I was like, well, my out-of-state one will be good for a little while, or maybe I'll just, you know, whatever. But now that I can do it in Bitcoin, yeah, man, I'll go do that. Help this guy out.
Do you have enough Bitcoin to do that, or should we ask for donations specifically?
Oh, well, we should ask for donations anyway. Yes.
Well, yes. we love donations in Bitcoin or in Federal Reserve notes. And if you want to donate some to NEMA to get his concealed carry permit, do it and then send us an email and say that's earmarked, just send that to NEMA, Michael doesn't get a cut, because I don't need a permit because I'm in Wyoming. I can carry concealed without a permit.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with NEMA V and Michael Dean. They'll be right back, just as soon as this drone is out of range. Brink of Freedom is a community-based network and magazine whose mission is to provide you with the information you need on your walk to freedom. From homesteading and gardening to tactical and firearms, Brink of Freedom provides everything you will need to gain the knowledge to be self-sufficient. If government doesn't like it, Brink of Freedom will cover it. Come share your knowledge and gain the knowledge of industry professionals within the community. Become a premium member and gain access to unlimited content and discounts on products and services from our merchants. Use the discount code FIENDS at brinkoffreedom.net.
It's the Freedom Fiends live talk radio show. My name is Nima Vidati. We've also got Michael W. Dean out there in his bunker in Wyoming. How's it going, Mr. Dean?
I'm in the Wormabago, which is a blimp flying over the rodeo.
We mix those metaphors way too much.
Yeah, we do.
I thought the Wormabago was the land-based mobile recording studio. Well, Airworm One.
You're right. You're right. I have a new show that I should mention.
Oh, yeah.
I have a new radio show that's The Fiends Are Not Going Anywhere, but I wanted to do 7 nights a week of The Fiends, or 7 days a week, and Nima couldn't do it. And instead of getting upset at him, I decentralized it.
You
know,
did.
That's what you do. You know, that's the way we work. We don't put all of our cats in one basket with the baby.
No, we don't put all our eggs in one Batman.
Yeah. So my show is called Michael Dean After Dark. And it's kind of like The Fiends, except it's going to be me and a co-host that's going to be different every night. There's about 8 or 10 of them. And you've heard a lot of them. A lot of them filled in for Nemo while he was on paternity leave.
Is it going to be sexy?
It's not going to be sexual, but it's going to be it's going to be a little more
after dark
than the Freedom Fiends. The Freedom Fiends is for dark. You know, for the whole family driving home from church to go to the VFW picnic afterwards. And the Freedom and Michael Dean After Dark is going to be more for like unemployed drug addicts, alcoholics, mental patients, insomniacs, and people who just can't sleep because of the hamster in their brain. And we're going to take calls a lot more than the Fiends, too. So it starts on GCN tomorrow night. I'm going to be doing two shows every Sundays. Oh. Yeah, it starts tomorrow night. It's a weird slot to describe because it's is it Sunday or Monday? It depends what time zone you're in. It's, you know, okay, it's going to start at 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. Mountain Time. Sunday through Thursday.
Okay. And the which is midnight to 2 Central Time, which is
1 a.m. Monday morning to 3 a.m. Monday morning East Coast time, and it's 10 p.m. to midnight Sunday night. But it's Sunday night, Monday night, Tuesday night, Wednesday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, it's going to be live, and then Thursday is going to be a best of that I put together each week of the previous four shows.
And Ian's picked it up on LRN too, so you can listen to that clean sounding feed over on LRN.com or the GCN feed as well, right?
Yep. And we're only on a few stations so far, so if you don't have it in your local town, you can listen on LRN feed or the GCN feed. And it's going to be a good time. It's also going to be a podcast. I'm going to put it up. Haven't decided. It's going to be on michaelwdean.com, but I haven't decided yet what I'm going to do with the torrents. I think I'm going to put them up all together once a week on its own feed. So torrenters should check that feed about Friday. So yeah, man, that's my new show. I want to talk about Satoshi and how he has not been found. Who is Satoshi, Nemo? Okay. What's a Satoshi?
Satoshi Nakamoto. Yeah, he was the guy. A lot of people think it's a pseudonym, a nom de plume.
Nom de coin.
Nom de coin, yeah. For the guy who basically wrote the white paper outlining how Bitcoin would work and then actually released the software that became the blockchain and Bitcoin. So he's kind of, Newsweek tried to say he was Bitcoin Jesus. I don't know if I like that.
Well, he basically invented Bitcoin. I mean, other people worked on it, but he came up with it and solved the problem. Basically, the idea of a decentralized currency like this has existed since the 70s. Cryptographers have been trying to figure out how to do this since the 70s. And he finally cracked the code and made it usable and changed the world and invented the blockchain, which is more important than Bitcoin itself. And Bitcoin is very important. So,
and it's why Bitcoin works.
Yeah, it's basically a decentralized database that cannot be corrupted or faked, that everybody has, and so you can't take it down by destroying one building.
The verification for it is decentralized, so lying can't really happen.
Yeah, unlike with everything the government does.
Right.
Yeah, so basically, like, nobody knew who he was. He posted a bunch on a forum and got a bunch of people involved and released the code and then just disappeared 3 years ago. Bitcoin came out 5 years ago, but he has not posted in 3 years. So no one knew who he was. I mean, they tried to put things together. They tried to compare his writing samples with other cryptographers. And Newsweek thinks they found him, but we're going to talk when we get back about the real dirt on that. And Newsweek, which we spell news W-E-A-K because they're weak journalists, doesn't really know what they're doing, and they are an old dinosaur thrashing in the tar pits that only exists to praise Obama. And they'll probably get a government bailout because I think they're losing money because their journalism, it doesn't work anymore in the internet age.
What did you say? They had a pre-internet vibe?
Yeah.
Are they the ones that do the up and down? Like they have like four people who had an up week or a down week?
Maybe. My parents used to have it. I mean, everyone my age, their parents used to have it on the coffee table. It was like what old people did. And, you know, the only place you can find it now is a dentist's office. Pretty much. Maybe schools. Maybe schools keep them alive with stolen government money. We'll be back for hour two.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Yeah, oh, it's the Freedom Fiends live talk radio show. Thank you so much for joining us for hour two. I am Nima Vidati. We've got Michael W. Dean out there, dozens of stories below the ground in the bottom of his bunker, drone proof.
Actually, I was just sitting in the sun sharing some chicken, some warm chicken with my cats. I like doing that because when I used to live in LA and I was poor and struggling and single and living in a studio apartment, which I have since replicated in my large house with my wife. Didn't you say that? My bedroom is like a recreation of a bachelor pad.
Yes. Yeah. Just your bedroom. You had to have it.
Yeah. I had to have it. I didn't even realize
what a man
cave
should be, right?
I just did it. Yeah. But my wife comes in my man cave a lot. She has a computer right next to mine. We sit next to each other, working side by side, like Madame and Pierre Curie, discovering radium and then dying of cancer. No. So I used to go get it whenever I'd get enough nickels and dimes together. I'd walk up the street to the mini mall and buy a burrito. Interesting mini mall. This is so LA. It was a mini mall with a grocery store, a burrito shop, and a plastic surgery center. That's kind of in the ghetto. Like, that's LA, man. So, it was like discount plastics. It wasn't Beverly Hills, man. It was like where you went.
Plastic surgery with actual plastic that they mold to your face.
Yeah. So I would go up there and get a burrito for like $2.90. Best burritos in the world, man. I miss that. Wyoming does not have it. They have good Japanese food in Casper.
Wyoming has awful Mexican
food. And it's funny because the Mexican – I don't want to bash the Mexican restaurant here. I'm not going to
– The only decent Mexican food I had when we lived in Wyoming was there was a taco stand in Riverton, like a trailer, a tiny, 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 tiny trailer. And it was delicious. He did the best pork al pastor. And I asked him where he's from. He said Texas. And I was like, okay, that makes sense. Me too.
Yeah. Yep. So anyway, I would get a burrito and I would go sit on my back porch and watch the sunset in LA, you know, in the heat in the winter, and share my burrito with my cat Charlie. And it was like a ritual we had. And Charlie loves me and loved doing this with me. And we'll get some chicken and my wife will cook it and I'll sit there and share it with the cats. And they'll come up and Charlie is really grateful and purrs and then goes sits in the sun and like digests and just passes out. But Fuzzy like fights me. Like I give him chicken. And then I try to give him more, and he bats my hand like, you're not feeding me chicken fast enough. That's funny. Yeah. So, Newsweek. News W-E-A-K.
Newsweek.
Yeah.
Weak sauce.
So, who is Satoshi has kind of been like, who is D.B. Cooper of modern times? It really is.
Do you know who I don't know what that is.
You really don't know who that is? It's a guy in the 70s. No. Oh, it's an awesome story. It's a guy in the 70s who hijacked a plane and demanded a few million dollars in cash, landed the plane, got the cash, they took back off. He walked on a plane with a – he didn't even have a gun. He said he had a gun, and they believed him. And he was debonair, dressed in a business suit. You know, people described him, kind of looked like a, hi, I'm D.B. Cooper, like the most interesting man alive, a young guy. Used one of the parachutes on the plane, literally jumped out of a commercial jetliner with a parachute and a few million dollars in cash and was never seen again. There's a lot of conjecture that he died. They actually found some of the money, like degraded years later in the mud in a river, on the mud banks of a river, you know, based on the serial numbers. But yeah, man, he got it. He basically got away with crime paid, maybe, because maybe he didn't die. But there was always this conjecture of who was D.B. Cooper, and that's kind of been the modern, you know, Satoshi is. Who is Satoshi? But Newsweek thought they found it out. So here's how bad their journalism is. And you're a journalist. You worked for a TV news outlet.
I don't know if I still am. I'm more of a commentator now. I've been a journalist.
Yeah. For two of the three letter, you know, ABC, NBC, CBS, can't say which two you worked for, but you worked for two of them, right? Maybe.
Right. We've said it before. People know.
So
you get it.
Yeah, I don't think your non-disclaimers count anymore. It's been years. Who'd you work for? You worked for ABC?
Well, I was an ABC affiliate and a CBS affiliate. But, okay. I mean, it's an affiliate. It's like a franchise. It's like I didn't work for McDonald's corporate. Yeah. I worked for down the road.
But you were you were basically on the TV in like three quarters of Wyoming. So
I was on the TV.
Yeah. And then you were on. And
I
then,
was going to be on television.
And then you were on like two counties in Washington, which is about as many people as the three quarters of the state of Wyoming. So,
yes. Yes, it was.
So Newsweek decided, you know, like nobody pays attention to us anymore. They only read us in dentist's office while waiting for painful surgery. So that's what Newsweek is good for. So apparently, so when they're not putting Obama with a halo, literally on the cover of their magazine. So a reporter at Newsweek found a 64-year-old Japanese American computer programmer living in California, some rural town in California, who's literally his birth name is Satoshi Nakamoto, which is the name that this programmer used, which is obviously a pseudonym for the programmer. And she's like, he's hiding in plain sight. It's his real name. And he uses something else now, like, you know, Damien or Desmond or something, his first name. But Dorian. It's his, what is it?
Dorian.
Mm-hmm. Dorian Nakamoto. But his birth name is Satoshi Nakamoto. So he's a libertarian. He's a gun nut. He's a model train enthusiast, and he's a cryptography expert. I mean, that kind of looked like that could be what Satoshi would be, you know, I would imagine. Mm-hmm. So, but she figured. Well,
and there was a lot of fun out of this whole debacle, including some fun in the Newsweek article, like the quote from his daughter about how he used to say, now the government agents are coming to get to you, and she would go hide in the closet.
For hide and seek, hide and seek. Yeah, he'd say, the government's coming to get you, go hide. I like that. You should try that with Lily, Nima. Train her well. Train her what to hide from.
Right.
So the Newsweek lady like went to his house and brought him sushi. That's kind of racist. Like if he was Italian,
did
would
she
you
bring him sushi? See, I thought it was she was at his house and then a whole bunch of other journalists, including Japanese journalists, came and he was like, somebody's got to buy me lunch, and he pointed at a Japanese journalist and said, let's go get sushi.
Okay. So. I'm getting the news wrong. I'm a commentator though. I'm not news. They're supposed to be news. Yeah. Okay. Right. So. You know, she asked, like, at first, he didn't want to be interviewed, and he called the police. And the police came, and he was interviewed with the police present. It was a short interview, and, you know, he didn't want to be interviewed. And she was like, are you the creator of the decentralized cryptocurrency Bitcoin? He kind of misunderstood the question and was like, yeah, I was involved in that. It was a lot, you know, I'm not involved in it anymore. Other people have taken it over, and I can't talk about it. She ran out the door, reported she'd found Satoshi, put a picture of him, and then immediately, as soon as the news broke, he was swamped. His privacy was ruined. People were camped out on his doorstep. People were calling him, had to, you know, disconnect the phone, whatever. It turns out he'd never heard of Bitcoin. He thought she was asking about he used to work for the government or a contractor working on cryptography for the military. And he was like, no, I'm not involved in that. I was involved in that. It's been turned over to other people and I can't talk about it. Which was his answer about working for government spooks designing, you know, secret agent type stuff. So they totally got it wrong. They presented this as fact.
Right,
so what do you
think
of that as a journalist?
It was completely awful what they did. And yeah, I think it was a lot of pressure in that old journalism world where you're being paid this salary and you have to produce. They don't care what they get. They just want you to come up with content within deadline. And this girl somehow got this wild idea and she went off on this wild goose chase. And in the end, I feel like she was just like, well, I'm just going to go for it. You know, even if she had her doubts, it was that pressure and that ceiling of that old model that made her decide to do it. Whereas I think people in the alt media put truth first before those kinds of sensational things, because I think they have a lot more editorial freedom and a lot less top-down pressure on them. I mean, if she would have done a little bit more work or asked or even known somebody who really knew about Bitcoin, I kind of got the feeling that she knows nothing about Bitcoin, this journalist who broke this story.
Yeah.
So I think if she had her finger on the pulse of some more of the insiders, she could have discussed it with them first before going off half-cocked on something like this.
Yeah,
now, somebody on Imgur actually posted this hilarious juxtaposition of an email supposedly from the fake Satoshi as versus some of the language of the actual Satoshi Nakamoto that came out with Bitcoin. Should I read some of this?
Yeah.
Okay, okay. This apparently is from the guy that Newsweek thought was Satoshi. Hi, I vote for underground railing for above project. The project should be done so the business shop's income from clients would be minimally affected. Good security system against usage of rail as a getaway means from the low income generated thieves criminals from the area east of LA, etc.
This is him. This is that Satoshi writing something.
Apparently, somebody on Imgur is claiming that this is Dorian Nakamoto, a resident from Temple City, California, and resident is spelled with a C.
Man, you know, I was looking for this Onion news piece, but I forgot. They're not radio friendly, but they have a piece about the New York Times or some big newspaper like becoming so irrelevant that they've only got three readers and one's a homeless guy. And so they decide to like personalize the newspaper and have like, you know, more Debbie centric news. And because like, Debbie really wants to hear more about things that are of interest to Debbie. Yeah.
Right. So, and then it's juxtaposed, obviously, with the Bitcoin P2P e-cash paper, which I guess was the beginning of his Y paper, which is, I've been working on a new electronic cash system that's fully peer-to-peer with no trusted third party. The paper is available at link. The main properties, double spending is prevented with the peer-to-peer network. No mint or other trusted parties. Participants can be anonymous. New coins are made from hash cash style proof of work. It's night and day. Doesn't seem like it was written by the same guy at all.
Yeah.
Now you could say, well, maybe he's, you know, he's got different identities. Maybe he acts like a silly resident from Temple City when he's talking to the government, and maybe he's different when he's talking to his peer-to-peer buddies. But I don't know.
I think you should read this thing I just sent you, which is by Appamato, who is not hidden. And I emailed him this morning to tell him about Meowbit, meowbit.com. This is actually the post that started Namecoin. And this is a known person. He's not hidden.
Should I start with retard, or what am I starting with here?
People attribute this Namecoin to Aaron Schwartz, but he actually came up with it independently like a year later. No, not retard. Let me send you that. That's the second page of someone else commenting on it. Sorry.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay. Okay.
Retard.
Yeah, I don't want to start with that. Okay, here we go. There we go. Appamato. BitDNS. Although there have been attempts to tackle DNS in a distributed way in the past, I don't think there have been solutions that have fully removed authority from the equation. If there was such a solution, it probably would have been able to implement Bitcoin directly on top of it, and we all know that didn't happen. However, it seems possible to create a Bitcoin clone, BitDNS, that provides a solution to distributed authority-free name allocation and transfer. Basically, the system is a copy of Bitcoin where miners generate 50 new name mappings of their choosing whenever they win a block.
Yeah, and this is like, you have to remember, this is a post on a public site. This isn't some intellectual paper peer-to-peer reviewed by some university. That's not how it works anymore, man. You just do it.
Just do it. Yeah, Bitcoins is as grassroots as it gets, and we'll be back in just a bit.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. That proves you're smarter than most people.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed: The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's a Freedom Fiends. So there's a thing that people say, it's called Goodwin's Law, which is that any discussion on the internet within a few pages turns to someone making a reference to the other person's beliefs being like Hitler. And we just came up with something new. We're calling it Appamato's Law, which is that any discussion of programming on the internet within one page, someone calls someone a retard. Because I sent Nina the second page by accident and opened with retard.
Right. Yeah. Ah, oh, man.
Paul Krugman, man. What Paul Krugman
do? Like you said, though, stuff still got done. Namecoin exists,
yeah.
And that's allowed .bit domains, which you can get to with Meowbit, which will mean a functional, user-friendly internet.
Censorship-proof.
That's censorship-proof, yeah. Exactly.
It's also not just censorship-proof. Like, in LibPair, without censorship, people would still want to use Namecoin distributed DNS because it propagates a lot quicker, like, you know, 40 minutes instead of 2 or 3 days worldwide. It's a lot harder to hijack or remove by any means at all. So there. But who's Paul Krugman and what has he said?
A lot of ridiculous things.
He works for the old media.
I didn't find a Snopes, but I did find some other people corroborating it and pointing to an actual article. So I guess you guys can do your own fact checking. Take it for what it is. But there is this quote in the Examiner.
Our crack smoking research team.
Yeah,
got right on that. That's you. You don't smoke crack.
I'm kidding. But apparently, some people think that Paul Krugman, and it makes sense to me, this is the kind of stuff he says, said, quote, by 2005 or so, it will become clear that the internet's impact on the economy has been no greater than the fax machine.
Well, he writes for the New York Times, right? Which is the old media.
I guess the internet hasn't had much effect on your employer, has it, Paul?
I know. He probably has a blog now, and it probably is the reason he's there at the New York Times, not whatever's put in the Sheila edition of the New York Times print edition.
And he's probably upset that he has a blog. He's like, ugh, I can't believe I have to do this.
I know. Paul Krugman. That's one of the things in the newsroom, like Will, the hero of it, you know, the flagship reporter that's kind of like the Edward R. Murrow of CNN or something in that universe. At one point, like they're introducing him to people in the office when he comes back from a long break, and he's like, "And this is Bobby. He does your blog." And he's like, "I have a blog."
Yeah. Well, I think when people are successful in a world, they kind of stop. They rest on their laurels sometimes.
Yeah.
And they think that the world, the snapshot of the world when they became successful and the tactics they used to achieve success is where it ends.
Because they're still surrounded with people who mirror that too. Like if you're a print journalist, you know, you still, even after print journalism is way on the way out or even dead, you still go to functions where people put on tuxedos and pat you on the back and give you statues for print journalism. You know, right. The economics of that still exists. It's kind of like the U.S. government or any government. Like, it's basically all smoke and mirrors. It's based on the threat of aggression, which, you know, newspapers aren't necessarily, although they probably get government bailouts at this point. That's been discussed.
Well, but they're the cheerleaders, and their success is dictated by how well they are at justifying the horribleness that is the state. Marty Rothbard has talked about that a lot. I've talked about it. I mean, and it's self-evident. I mean, if you don't toe the line, you're gonna have a much harder time getting the good jobs.
Yep. Yeah, so Goodwin's Law, we've said Goodwin's Law. We've said Appomattox Law, which is someone, no matter how brilliant your post is about computer programming, within a page, someone's calling someone a retard. And then there was Dean's Law, which is something I came up with, which is that the amount of – it's basically saying small towns are the place to be. It's basically that the amount of freedom in a geographic location is inversely proportionate to the height of the tallest building in that location.
I think a description of how in the old model of things, centralization was what drove everything. And you had to be in the town with the big, tall buildings because that's where the money was made and you had to be close to it. I mean, the world's changing. Bitcoin 2.0 is going to change that kind of stuff. And people like Paul Krugman, the reason he can compare in his brain the internet to a fax machine saying, oh, yeah, that's kind of neat, is because he doesn't understand the potential. He sees it and he thinks, oh, it does this one thing. Now he doesn't look at what it is as a whole and what it changes with regard to how people can do things. And the guy from the CEO of BitShares, Daniel Larimer, had a great point about this. He says that he doesn't think that people should be calling the new stuff coins anymore. He thinks that the analogy to currency is kind of stilted, and he compares it to when people called cars horseless buggies at first.
Yeah.
And people might go, oh, that's a cool novelty, it's a buggy that drives without a horse, how fun and neat, but not really understanding how revolutionary it will be, how it will change how people act, where people live, how goods are transported, all this kind of stuff. And we'll have more on that when we get back from the break.
listening to Freedom Fiends, not your grandpa's talk radio.
Hi, I'm Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends, and like you, I'm concerned with privacy on the internet. The electronic police state is strangling our previous protections, and the central scrutinizer is trying to squint into all areas of our lives. That's why smart people surf the net with a VPN or virtual private network. I use a VPN from Bola VPN. Bola VPN has your utmost security in mind and will allow you to surf, email, and do other computing tasks without leaving a trail of breadcrumbs across the internet. Unlike many other VPN providers, Bola VPN doesn't log traffic. With Bola VPN, you can change your apparent location or disappear completely. Bola VPN has been around since 2007, which is OG in the VPN world. Bola VPN is easy to install and configure. Best of all, it can be had for less than 25 cents a day, which is a small price to pay for this much security. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them through the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
Yes. And this song is...
We've got these dangerous bitcoins out here allowing all the pushers and the ladies of the night to have all the bad things they want. And we also need to get rid of these darn devil wagons.
Yeah, yeah. So I want to talk a little more about Blockstrian economics. Blockstrian economics. That's what we're calling post-Austrian economics. That also includes blockchain economics of Bitcoin, Namecoin, Litecoin, Dogecoin, and all the other coins. The only two that really matter so far are Bitcoin and Namecoin, I think. But
did you see the Dogecoin video, though? It kind of makes me want to go out and buy a bunch of Dogecoin.
No, man, it's a fad. Besides, now you have Meowbit. There's a cat.
Hold on.
I don't care.
Blockstream economist Jeff Tucker brought up a good point about fad coins, like Dogecoins, is they have their place and they make it fun. And he said, you know, 50 years ago, if you went and bought a bottle of wine, it was like Chateau, blah, blah, blah. And people thought, oh, okay, wine is really pretentious and lame and it's for old people. But now it's like, you know, old B word and stuff like that, and gnarly head and red.
Yeah, I know. There was a lady on. There was a panel. I mean, I was basically at the convention without being there because I've watched a bunch of audio and listened to a bunch of video, and vice versa also. But there was a lady on. There was an altcoin panel, and there was a lady who basically said, "Who is the Dogecoin aficionado?" And she said that like Dogecoin is going to be a lot of people's first coin. It's cute. It's got a puppy on it. You know, it's cool. Mm-hmm. So
mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, totally.
But I want to talk a little about Luddites, which are people who avoid technology. And the most famous Luddite was probably Ted Kaczynski. But it's ironic because while he did live in the woods without running water or heat or electricity, he is known to people because of his manifesto being spread on the internet. And he was a bad guy. He blew people up. He was a horrible guy. But I do want to say the FBI spent billions of dollars trying to catch him and didn't. And the only reason they caught him was because his brother recognized some of his writings once they were published in the old media because they'd been on the internet.
But then the FBI had like a press conference congratulating themselves on their amazing police work and how much of a team effort it was and gave themselves medals.
Literally, if they hadn't existed, he would have been found anyway. If the New York Times or whatever old media existed then, I think it was the New York Times and the LA Times published his manifesto because he said he would stop blowing people up if they published it. They negotiated with terrorists. They gave in to his demand. They published it. And his brother read it and was like, this reminds me of phrases my brother used in his feisty manifesto, his violent feisty manifestos back in the day. So, yeah, he's a Luddite, but Luddites are people who are afraid of technology. And there was recently a U.S. senator who said, we need to outlaw Bitcoin right now. It was that guy, the guy who shot Obamacare with a rifle. When he was running office,
Joe Manchin,
and then when he became when he won, he immediately signed up. He liked Obamacare, and he was like, and he was being a gun guy in that video, saying we got to draw a line in the sand against federal government intervention. And then he just like he's pro gun control and he's pro Obamacare. So they just lie all the time, man, all of them. But he said that they should outlaw Bitcoin immediately, and some other politician in Colorado countered as a joke by saying we need to outlaw the federal dollar and named all the same things. Like the guy said, we need to outlaw Bitcoin because it's used for crime. It's not traceable. And the same thing is true of U.S., you know, $100 bills. I mean, everything that's bought with crime is bought with U.S. money usually or drugs. mm-hmm, or mm-hmm, guns.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. And then, yeah, think about how often the banks go down or get arrested for money laundering or anything like that.
Never.
Never.
That's
yeah.
What they
and
do, man.
Worst case scenario is somebody might have to pay a small fine, which, since it's a corporation, then gets passed on in extra fees to their customers, you know?
You know, I learned something from that convention that I did not know, and it sounds like it's true. Corporations, if you're a legal corporation, you have a legal obligation to your shareholders that you can go to jail if you don't meet this, if you grossly don't meet this. You have a legal obligation to turn a profit. And that means if a government contract comes along that offers you more money than something you would ethically rather do, you have to take the government contract by law.
Huh. See, I knew the thing about turning a profit. I didn't know that – I didn't understand the implication of, yeah, well, then you'd have to take the government contract even if it was against your best interest.
And the government contracts always pay more because it's stolen money that's just printed out of thin air.
Right.
Think
right,
about
right.
that. Like, everything that politicians say that they're afraid of about Bitcoin is more true about Federal Reserve notes.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And you're forced to use it by the point of a gun. Literally, you can only pay your taxes in – if you tried to pay your taxes in gold, they would not accept it. Literally. Yeah. They won't. They can't.
Where's the proof of work for when you create a Federal Reserve note? There's not none there.
Yeah. And with Bitcoin or Namecoin, it's in the blockchain, which is public. So yes. We want to talk about some old school Luddites who are afraid of progress. Read this article. And this is a real thing from back in the day.
Yes, this is from the Bullitt County History Museum. I guess it's in Kentucky.
What year is this?
This is 1908, January 21st, from the Bullitt County News. The headline is, Representative Thompson introduces bill to put devil wagons out of business in the state of Kentucky. It fixes the speed limit at 3 miles an hour. All right, I'll read the first few graphs here. Automobiles will have to go out of business if a bill which is to be introduced by W.M. Thompson, who is known as Windy Bill, and who has a voice when it is in condition that reflects great credit on its owner, says that so many autos have been running over the state and especially his county that they have become a menace to the lives of the people, and he would put them in a class with traction engines. I don't know. What's a traction engine? I don't get that.
Some kind of I don't know, a tractor.
All right. Some new technology that he was scared of as well. The bill, which is being framed by Mr. Thompson, is a lively one. It will provide that a man must go ahead of each automobile and keep 100 yards in advance of it on foot all the time so as to warn persons along the route that the engine is coming.
So you have to have a pace car walker for your car?
Yes. You have to have somebody walking at walking speed to announce that.
3 miles an hour is like people can walk faster than that, and
that's the point. Yeah,
I mean
the
absurdity of this, and this has been reprinted recently in very statist newspapers. Like, ha ha ha! Look at how silly they were back then. But think about every law that people try to pass. I mean, basically,
same thing. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Basically, the only laws it should be is like, don't murder, don't steal, don't commit theft, fraud, or aggression, which is what governments violate by their mission statement of existing. But those are the only things that should be illegal. Every law that comes along to do anything only harms people, only puts another cop on every corner, only leads to taking away your guns and all your other freedoms. But every law that anyone tries to pass these days is as absurd as this law. But it just in historical, like we can't see it yet because we're not 100 years in the future. So go on.
Yeah, so the machines will not be allowed to travel at a rate of speed greater than 3 miles an hour, and no more touring parties will be permitted. Now, he didn't end up passing this. And this
No more touring parties, meaning like only one person per car. That's what that sounds like to
me. Well, I could imagine in the early days
now,
of cars.
Like basically now you're like – you're almost forced by law in some places to have more than one person in a car. Like you can't drive, you know, if you don't have two people in the car, you can't go more than 10 miles an hour in LA during rush hour.
I think by touring parties, they meant multiple cars like driving around. Like I imagine in the early days of cars, it was like such a novelty thing that people would go out.
So you can't go on vacation with your cousin and your uncle.
No convoy. Yeah. I guess. But utterly ridiculous, with no vision of how important and revolutionary this new technology was. Instead, a fear of dynamicism, a fear of that the world could change and it might be slightly unknown to you or completely unknown to you, and you must prevent it
what
from
year
happening
was this?
Under force of guns. 1908, so before even the Model T.
But actually, the airplane existed by then. I'm pretty sure. I think it was 1903, wasn't it? Let's look it up.
Let's wiki it. This is what wiki
is for. Decentralization. But it wasn't – it didn't exist like, you know, everywhere.
Right.
1903 is the the first flight. That's what I thought.
Cool. Well, there you go. So yeah, and this I'm pretty sure this article was spoofed in Red Dead Redemption, because there was a newspaper in Red Dead Redemption, the Rockstar video game around the turn of the century, and there was an article or an opinion piece just like this about how cars were the devil's wagon.
Wagon. That's so awesome.
Yes. So now here's the thing with cars too, is we could have way cooler car or travel or transportation technology if the auto industry wasn't as regulated as it is. A lot of what people talk about being so great in the Bitcoin space or the Bitcoin ecosystem. I love these buzzwords people put out. But they talk about how the reason that it's so great and getting better all the time is there's so much tinkering at the edges. There's room for everybody to try their own thing. And everybody is trying something in the hopes that they'll become Bitcoin millionaires. And the greatest stuff is going to be widely adopted. That's how a market works.
Derek and I are going to be the first .bit millionaires. I lived in San Francisco and worked in the .com boom, the bubble in the late 90s. Like literally getting paid $30 an hour to have my feet up on the table and do really basic typing and editing. I mean, it was like it was the coolest job in the world, actually. I could dress how I want. I could come anywhere between like 5 in the morning and noon as long as I stayed 8 hours and clocked in and out. I clocked in biometrically, like with a fingerprint, which was kind of spooky because nobody had that back then. But yeah, man, it was weird. It was really weird seeing that. But yeah, we're going to be the first .bit millionaires. And go to meowbit.com, and for free, it will always be free. We haven't figured out our business model yet, but we do take donations, and you will get on the golden blockchain of redemption if you donate. So yeah, man, if people don't get in the way, things happen. And you know what? With software things, even if people get in the way, things can happen. Because to build a car and have a car factory, you need a brick and mortar location that they can just walk up to and close with men with guns. With software, there are ways to hide. There are ways to slip through it. There are like loopholes galore. And it's not illegal yet, so I'm not recommending anything illegal.
Although the confluence of software and hardware could be changing that too. I mean, if you could have a 3D printer big enough, you could theoretically print out pieces of your car.
But they also
many different possibilities.
They're also trying to lock down computer hardware. So you can't do cool things with it without being traceable, and can't really do cool things with it. You know, Apple, somebody once said Steve Jobs made jail cool. I got an argument with somebody yesterday about he was yelling at me for using Windows, and I started to say something and he just started yelling at me. It was Derek J. We got in a slap fight, and then like it was pretty funny. It was basically
is there video. I'd love to see that.
No, but
fight.
Here's the thing that came out of it. He's going to be one of the co-hosts on my show. And you know, afterwards when we had apologized, I said, "Oh, I'm sorry, man. I don't know. Do you still want to be on my radio show?" And he's like, "Yeah." And I'll try not to do that. And if I do, you know, I said, "If you do, I'll just turn you down." He's gonna broadcast it video, his end only, with a picture of me on YouTube, and call it Derek J's remix of Michael Dean After Dark, and turn me down and play funk music if he doesn't like me. Yeah, it was basic.
Oh man, that could be great. All right, we'll be back.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed, buy sheep for sheep on sheep, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
Hey, this is Squiggles from Death Clocks.
And you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess that says worms now. So there you go.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Freedom Fiends.
All right. Fiends. So, go ahead.
Before we go to our tweak and review, I want to finish the thing with Derek J. I want to say what the argument was about. It was about Mac versus PC. He's a Mac guy. I'm not a PC guy. I own Windows computers. I don't define myself by them. Mac people define themselves by their computers. And it's all fashion. And see, I was trying to interrupt him to say he was doing a straw man. I didn't want to argue PC over Mac. I wanted to say that arguing Mac over PC is a specious argument. And he thought I was trying. He's so used to like defending his shiny, pretty, you know, purple Macs that match his bow tie to the world, you know, because that's what Mac people do. People who define themselves by Macs. And I was just trying to say, look, man, Mac versus PC is arguing Democrat versus Republican. The only real argument I'll listen to, because I know enough about computers, is Linux versus either Mac or PC. Because Linux is libertarian, Mac is Republican or Democrat, and PC is Republican. And like Democrats and Republicans all just want to keep you in their jail. And Linux is the libertarian because it wants you set free. So I wasn't going to listen to that argument. That's all. But that was leading up to I have a new show starting tomorrow night, Sunday night, starting at midnight, going from midnight Central to 2 a.m. Central Monday morning. It's Monday through Friday on GCN and on LRN. And it's called Michael Dean After Dark. And it's going to be a good show, man. So let's what are we going into next? Here's what we're going into next. Yeah. Go ahead with your bad self with your tweak and review there, Nima Vidati.
This is the tweak and review. I'm riding high on the Bitwagon. I think a lot more people are after the Texas Bitcoin Conference. At least they're riding higher on the Bitwagon. Coinference. Even Robert Murphy, whose speech at the conference was basically about, here's why the old school Austrians aren't really into Bitcoin, and here's kind of why that doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, but he still played it way down the middle. He wasn't an evangelist until the second day where I said, hey, Robert Murphy, are you a true believer? Because we were sitting in front of the Free Talk Live booth there ready to go on. And he said, yeah, I am. You know, he was kind of like, yeah, I guess I am. And I was like, well, what changed your mind? He said, well, Jeff Tucker told me yesterday at the bar that, hey, man, it's about the blockchain. It's the blockchain. And he got it. He got the potential is not that, oh, great, we have this alternative currency that can compete with other currencies. It's why a Bitcoin is an alternative currency that's better than other currencies. And that's the fact of the blockchain, something that is completely verifiable, doesn't place trust in the hands of fallible individuals, but place trusts in actual math that can be verified and proven and dispersed and decentralized. So it's not one person saying how it's going to be. It's people figuring out through consensus how things really are. A beautiful thing. And so at the conference, I realized that everybody's thinking about the next thing, what Bitcoin can do to organize society. It's about so much more than just having some coins in your wallet, man.
I'm going to call this episode Blockstrian Economics Will Turn the State into MySpace. And remind us about the MySpace comment, because it was as good as Blockstrian Economics.
Yes. Well, so I was talking to the CEO of BitShares, Daniel Larimer, and he said, you know, this is going to change the world, not because we're going to take on and fight directly against the state or anything like that. I'm paraphrasing here, but he said, you know, everybody will want to opt in just because it's so profitable. It's so much better. It'll make their lives so much more than what they are in the current state paradigm.
I'll bet the next president will be taking donation in Bitcoin. I'll bet you.
Yeah, but that's silly.
It doesn't make it cool. That's like
no.
Obama saying, I have the most open administration ever because he released the source code for the whitehouse.gov website.
Right. That's going to be silly. That'd be like putting car tires on an actual horse-drawn buggy and saying, this is my version of the car.
Yeah.
No. Politicians accepting Bitcoin, that's silly. And that's what Larry Gonzalez does. That's why he was going to
the
Bitcoin conference.
And there was a lobbyist there. Yeah. Like, why was the lobbyist there?
Well, not the lobbyist, but the state rep who was supposed to go there but ducked out at the last minute, apparently because antiwar.com was going to be there. His claim to fame at the Bitcoin conference was going to be that, yeah, I take Bitcoins. But that's irrelevant, man.
You're still a politician. Yeah. So yeah. He sent his guy to figure out what it is. Like, this economy that's been going.
It wasn't his guy. We don't want to link those two. Right. This was a separate guy that was the lobbyist.
But it was a guy who's trying to figure out where they should stand on this thing that's already unstoppable at this point.
Right. They want to know how they can lead the parade, but the answer is they can't. They need to sit down and watch the world change to their own chagrin. We'll be back
tomorrow. Thank you for
tomorrow,
listening to
Freedom Fiends
with Nima V and Michael Dean. Make an appointment to listen while it's still legal. Learn more about the Fiends and download archived shows at freedomfiends.com. That's FreedomFeens.com.